I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. Brian Lee Crowley joins me again. We spoke, we last spoke in September on the publication of his best-selling book, Fearful Symmetry, The Fall and Rise of Canada's Founding Values. It was a thought-provoking, challenging book, and I fondly recall the conversation a great deal. Now, he's co-authored a new book, The Canadian Century, Moving Out of America's Shadow. It's written with Jason Clemens and Niels Veldhaus. It, too, is a stimulating, invigorating, sometimes provocative, sometimes incendiary book. Sir Wilfrid Laurier, in 1904, said that the 20th century would belong to Canada. The authors contend that though his plans went off the rails, he was 100 or so years off, and this century will be transformative for Canada, that the potential is there to take the world's stage. They look through Laurier's lens, how this can be achieved, why it hasn't, and what we've done right and wrong along the way. Brian Crowley is the managing director of the MacDonald Laurier Institute for Public Policy, a think tank that he talked about when he was last on. He remains a frequent commentator on various media, and his website is at brianleecrowley.com. The Canadian Century is published by Keyporter. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program in Vancouver this day, Brian Crowley. Good morning, Mr. Crowley.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Were you surprised at how the last book, how that came off and how that was received?
Well, I have to tell you, Joe, that I was quite taken aback. Every author wants to enjoy success in the sense of not only selling books, but getting the ideas in the books into people's heads. That's always the most important thing. I've been quite taken aback by the number of people who've come up to me and said, you know, I didn't just find your book interesting. It actually was kind of moving. I mean, I've had people tell me that they cried when they read parts of the book about how Canada's changed over the last 50 years and so on, because it kind of it put into words inarticulate feelings that I think a lot of people have had. And so when people tell you that they not only, you know, we're interested in the ideas, but actually had this kind of strong emotional reaction, I just think it couldn't possibly be better.
And, you know, I would read about the book online, columnists, prominent columnists discussing it, politicians even on Twitter recommending it. You struck a chord. And do you think you've obviously engaged in some debate. Do you think you've changed anything?
Well, you know, Victor Hugo said that ideas were the most powerful force in the world, more powerful than all the armies, and I believe that that's true because, you know, if you like to think of it in these kind of modern terms, ideas are the software in our brain, and, you know, if you put a new program into a computer, you can make it do new things, and I think when you can put new ideas in people's heads, when you can change their assumptions, when you can make them see, let's say, Canada in a different way and understand it differently, I think it changed their behavior, you know, and I think that if I look at the reaction that I've got from lots of people, as you say, in the political class and in the media and so on, it's remarkable the number of people who have said to me, you know, I as a result of the book, I see Canada differently. I understand the last 50 years differently, and I think that's going to have a big impact if those ideas continue to spread. It's just going to create a different climate of public opinion in which, you know, policy will be made and people will write about the country, and that's the highest possible praise one can give to a book.
Now, in this book, this new book, The Canadian Century, the three of you go back to Laurier to look ahead. Do you think you look at Laurier differently than we've had previously?
Well, you know, I think that Canada and Canadians have tended to undervalue their history, and it's not that I think that I'm helping people to see Laurier differently. I think, in many ways, I'm introducing people to Laurier for the first time. Other than seeing him on the, you know, the $5 bill, I don't think many people are really familiar with him. And what I tried to say in the book with my co-authors was that, you know, Laurier was really a pivotal figure in Canadian history. And when he said that the 20th century would belong to Canada, he wasn't just talking through his hat. And, you know, when we got to the end of the 20th century and we said, well, it didn't quite work out that way, I wanted to invite Canadians to think about the fact that Laurier actually had a plan about how to make the 20th century belong to Canada. And if we failed to achieve that goal in most of the century, it was because we weren't listening to what he told us we had to do in order to achieve that. And I was glad to be able to put Laurier's message in modern language and modern idiom and kind of bring it back for us to think about.
So what happened from 1904 to today? What happened to his plan? How did it get off the rails?
Well, you know, in a way, the new book is a sequel to Fearful Symmetry, in the sense that in Fearful Symmetry, I really lay out in some considerable detail what happened in the last 50 years. You know, I talk about how the government grew and in response to Quebec nationalism, the baby boom generation, all those things. And these were all things that were dragging us away from Laurier's vision for Canada, which is a vision not of no government, is not an anti-government thing, is not an anarchist thing. On the contrary, he believed in strong government, but he thought government needed to be kept within bounds. He believed that public finances need to be run responsibly. He didn't believe in big borrowing. He believed that we needed to keep taxes below the level in the United States if we wanted to enjoy a competitive advantage in North America. All of these things were ideas that we abandoned over most of the decades following the 1960s, until really we began to butt up against the limits of what those these new policies we put in place would allow us to achieve, and that's when we began to return, in essence, to the Laurier plan, because we began to discover that it actually works for Canada. It's based on a profound understanding of Canada's relationship with the United States and its place in the world.
How do you think the his party today, the Liberal Party of today, would react to the Laurier that they read about in this book? It doesn't seem like someone that they would subscribe to.
Well, you know, it's funny. Jean Chrétien, for example, is well known for saying that Laurier was the greatest prime minister that Canada ever had. And, of course, under Laurier's government, Canada enjoyed tremendous prosperity, almost unprecedented growth. And these are some of the things that people who are knowledgeable about the time look back and look back on Laurier and his administration fondly. And I think it's possible for people today, including in the Liberal Party, to look back and say, gosh, you know, this is part of our history. And, the Liberal Party continues to be committed to things like individual liberty and so on. You read their constitution, it's actually quite strongly expressed in those terms. And so if you look at, for instance, the budget reforms that brought us back to balanced budgets, more responsible public finances and so on, these were actually achievements of the Liberal Party of Canada in Ottawa. And so I think the Liberal Party has, is ambivalent. They want to claim the Laurier legacy in terms of valuing individual freedom, in terms of prosperity and growth. But Laurier had a different vision about how to use government to achieve those things, and I think the Liberal Party hasn't quite worked out yet how to come to terms with its own history.
The subtitle of this book, The Canadian Century, is Moving Out of America's Shadow. And you argue in the book that we should do that, Canada should, because the direction that they're heading towards is not ideal. Is that just the Obama administration?
Oh, heavens no. I mean, actually, just as in Canada, you know, we got off track under a series of governments, Liberal governments under Pearson and Trudeau, but also, Conservative governments under Mulroney. We got off track in terms of public finances, irresponsible borrowing, all that kind of stuff, entitlement programs like the CPP out of control. In the United States, these problems have also been festering for many years. I think you can go back to Carter, you can go back to Reagan, you can go back to both Bushes, you can go back to Bill Clinton, although Bill Clinton is the one who did the most to try and fix America's problems in public finances, but he ultimately was not successful in the way that Canada was successful in fixing these problems. So Obama is only actually continuing a problem that has been festering for many years. He may be making it slightly worse, but I hardly think that we can hold him responsible for something that is really the cumulative achievement of the entire American political class.
In near the end of the book, you talk about one thing that you all recommend, and that is self-confident engagement with the Americans.
Yes.
How does that happen?
Well, you know, in the book, we argue that we started to get back on track for Laurier's plan in what we call the redemptive decade, which started with the free trade agreement under Mulroney in 1988 and ended with the first balanced budget in a generation under Jean Chrétien and Paul Martin in 1997. The free trade agreement with the Americans, which began that redemptive decade, I think, you know, that this is exactly the sort of thing that Laurier had in mind. You may recall that Laurier actually went down to defeat in the election of 1911 on the issue of free trade with the Americans. He believed that this kind of self-confident engagement with the Americans was absolutely essential to Canada's prosperity and managing its place in North America and the world. And so we began this decade of reform with a redefinition of our relationship with the United States. But I think we sort of almost, over 20 years later, we are now realizing the limits of that reform, that free trade agreement with the United States, and we're going to have to carry on even further in drawing America into carefully managed, structured relationships. You know, perimeter border would be a good example of the sort of thing we need to do. Perhaps a common tariff so that we can get rid of a lot of the border controls between our two countries. These are things that Laurier advised us. You know, we don't need to be afraid of the Americans. Just because they're big and powerful doesn't mean that we don't have tools at our disposal to manage that relationship successfully, and we shouldn't fear American power, but try to grapple with it constructively.
Folks on the left will look at the book's cover and see Moving Out of American Shadow and think that that's something that they would subscribe to. And then at the end of the book, and you just mentioned it, you talked about greater integration, that we should have treaties on security and a continental customs union. One thing that I found interesting in the book that you suggest is a joint committee between members of Congress and members of Parliament.
Yes.
People would look at that and say that the terms are contradictory. Moving out of American shadow, page 161 of the book, you talk about taming our neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
That would be contradictory to what you call for, what you all three essentially call for at the end of the book, is greater integration.
Well, you've got to remember that when we say we're moving out of America's shadow, what we're comparing it with is what happened in most of the 20th century, where America, you know, grew very successfully, was the economic dynamo of the world, and we were kind of very much the runners-up within North America. And yet, after the reforms that I talked about in that redemptive decade, stretching from free trade to the fixing our fiscal problem, we then began to achieve the kind of growth and development that Laurier foresaw for us. And we, for instance, went through a decade where we outpaced the G7 in economic growth, in job creation, outpaced the United States in terms of business investment, and a whole series of other things. So we began to enjoy that prosperity that Laurier said was available to us if we did the right things. And when I say that we want to move out of America's shadow, I mean that we want to stop playing second fiddle and being a very sort of pale imitation of the United States and achieve our rightful place as the preferred destination in North America for investment, for economic activity, for immigrants, and so on. And I think we have the power to do that. Now, part of achieving that means managing our relationship with the United States successfully. Moving out of America's shadow doesn't mean that we abolish the need for Canada to have a relationship with the United States. It means that we can be the outperformer in North America in a way that America was for most of the 20th century. I think that option is available to us.
What have we done in British Columbia that's useful?
Well, you know, I think British Columbia is one of the provinces that threw itself into reform with great enthusiasm. You know, for example, there were very significant tax reforms under the Campbell government. There were welfare reforms. Welfare reform is something we spend some time talking about in the book. It's one of the great successes of the decade of reform. I think while it's unpopular in some quarters, you know, the harmonized sales tax reform continues that that reform thrust and is going to actually stand British Columbia in good stead. Obviously, British Columbia, you know, if I revert to Laurier and his advice to us, he said, you know, we have to engage with the Americans. They're our principal market. They're our great ally, but we must seek markets wherever they are to be found. And, of course, British Columbia is, for Canada, the great gateway to the Pacific. We're going to build a very interesting relationship with China, with India, and so on. We're already doing it today, but there's obviously much more to be done. I think British Columbia is absolutely going to be a leader in creating the kind of Canada that this book envisages.
And do you see people on the federal scene who see things the way you do and will take us to that century?
Well, as I said a moment ago, actually, you know, the Liberal Party already has the legacy of the Martin Chrétien budget reforms. I mean, these are essential to the positioning that Canada is in now. They were anti-free trade for a while, but they've made their peace with the free trade agreement. I think that there are people in the Liberal Party who are very interested in seeing this kind of program go ahead. I think there are people in the Conservative Party that are on side with this. And in fact, one of the reasons we pushed so hard to get this book out as quickly as we did was we wanted this book, in a sense, to become the point of reference for all the political parties when the next election happens. We want this to be the script that people in all parties sort of point to, whether they agree or disagree. We think that these are the crucial ideas that Canada must engage with when it thinks about its future. And we're hoping that the book becomes, in a sense, a touchstone for all political parties in not only the next election, but for the next decade.
And how does Canada look to the rest of the world after all this?
Well, you know, if you look at how Canada looks to the world today, Canada looks pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know, we came out of the recession far stronger than almost any other Western industrialized country. You know, we didn't have to bail out any banks. We continue to have, you know, competitive tax rates that are still headed down. While America, you know, is in great disarray, its tax rates are bound to increase as it wrestles with its entitlement and deficit problems. You know, Europe is being rocked by Greece and Portugal and Italy and other Spain countries that are having terrible problems with public finances. I think Canada is a shining model to the rest of the world right now. That doesn't mean we haven't done anything wrong. We've got lots of things we need to do better. As we say in the book, we've begun to get back on track for Laurier's plan. We haven't finished, but if you look at the results that just the beginnings of getting back for that on that plan have achieved for us, I think it should make us want to finish the job.
And you live in Ottawa now, right?
That is correct. I've started a new national think tank called the MacDonald Laurier Institute.
Yeah, and so this book is sort of, I guess, from what I read, is the first real big thing that's come out of the Institute, right?
Yes, we started with a paper about Aboriginal post-secondary education in March, and now we're bringing out The Canadian Century. It's our first book, it's already garnering quite a lot of attention.
How did the three of you get together to write this?
Oh, we were together, I mean, we've known each other for years, but we were together at a conference, actually in Ottawa, and we got into a discussion because the conference was composed of both Canadians and Americans, and, a conversation started about how much the position of Canada and the United States relative to each other had changed over the last decade. And we began to realize that there was a story there that Canadians did not understand and that Americans had never heard of. And we thought that was a pretty good story to tell to people on both sides of the border.
And how did it work? Because Clemens, he lives in San Francisco, and Niels, he's out here at the Fraser Institute, right?
Yes, that's correct. Mostly worked by email, and in fact, I remember that one of our co-authors one Sunday morning had the poor judgment to sleep in, and by the time he woke up, he said he was startled to find that the other co-author and I had already exchanged 40 emails that day, just working out different points in the book and so on. And I have to say that my two co-authors are extremely disciplined, hardworking, intelligent, smart people, and they've been a delight to collaborate with. And we just all put our heads down and in our spare time push this thing out. And I'm very proud of the result.
Brian, it's been good to talk again. You've started a useful and important discussion again with this book. Good luck with this book.
Well, thanks for your interest, Joe, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Will do, yeah. BrianLeeCrowley.com is his website. The book is called The Canadian Century, Moving Out of America's Shadow, co-written with Jason Clemens and Niels Veldhaus. Brian Crowley, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Flanta.